You're now listening to Advocate by APHR, ASEAN Parliamentarians for Human Rights. APHR is a network of current and former parliamentarians from Southeast Asia who use their unique position to advance human rights and democracy in the region. Hello, I'm Karina Teusijarana, Media Manager of APHR. I'll be your host for today, and today we'll be talking with APHR board member and Malaysian Member of Parliament, Wong Chen. Hi, YB Wong Chen. Thank you for being with us.
Hi, Karina. Thank you for inviting me.
YB Wong Chen is a Malaysian politician and lawyer who has served as a non-executive chairman of the Malaysia Debt Ventures Berhad since May 2023, chairman of the International Relations and Trade Parliamentary Select Committee from December 2019 to May 2020, and again since May 2023, as well as being the Member of Parliament for Subang since May 2018. Today, we will talk about the APHR toolkit for the Malaysian legislative process, what's inside the Malaysia Parliament, the role of Malaysian MPs, as well as Southeast Asian MPs. So now, YB, before we go any further into discussion, can you maybe introduce a little bit about your background and how you first entered politics and what interested you about APHR?
Okay, well, thank you, Karina. I joined politics around 2009. Prior to that, I was a corporate lawyer doing a lot of mergers and acquisition and also IT law. So basically, I did a lot of work merging IT companies. But I also dealt with a few family offices where the companies want to sell off their businesses because there's no transition from the older generation to the next generation. So I did that for about 22 years. But I come from a family of business people as well. So it was a natural progression into it. But as a young student, I was always involved in human rights, environmental issues. So, it seemed like a natural progression. When I reached the age around 40 years old, I decided that I will take a break from the corporate world and join politics instead.
That's a very interesting career progression. After you joined Parliament, how did you first hear about APHR and what made you interested in joining APHR?
Okay, so I joined Parliament after winning my first seat, which is called Kelantan Jaya in 2013. I come from the Parti Keadilan Rakyat, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim's party, and our party is very closely linked to the DAP, which is the Democratic Action Party in Malaysia. We are the coalition on, back then called Pakatan Rakyat. Yeah, now it's called Pakatan Harapan. And one of the key leaders in DAP is YB Charles Santiago. He became very close to me because we have both interest in human rights issue, something that I've been looking into since high school and also university level. So this was like 20 plus years ago. So when I met Charles asked me to join APHR. So I think I would have joined APHR somewhere between 2015 or 2014. Yeah. So, and since then I've been involved, continuously every year. So it's almost more than a decade now.
As you said, you've joined APHR since 2015, but more recently you've become a member of APHR's board. Can you speak a little bit about your role on APHR's board and as well as what APHR has been doing in Malaysia?
Okay. So the APHR board is essentially because YB Charles Santiago did not contest again in the last election. So to be the so-called chairman of the Malaysian chapter, the person has to be a member of parliament. So YB Charles asked whether I would take up the position. I reluctantly say yes, but my heart is with it, but I have so many chairmanships in Malaysia at the moment, it's incredible. So, but I'm very happy to join the board since I know many of the board members. So what we're doing differently, or not really differently, because Charles is still at the APHR big level as the co-chairman. So what we're doing is continuing his work mostly, but we're also trying to produce a different direction. Because when I joined APHR, and I remember this very well, I come in with the more like a corporate angle, about corporations, how to do things differently, not purely from an NGO point of view. So I'm quite happy to introduce some level of pragmatism, I think, and also some sort of understanding in how the world organizes itself in terms of corporations and the fact that we can if we try to understand them, we can try to nudge them to be more and better citizens in terms of human rights. So what we're doing specifically in Malaysia is we did the freedom of religion issue recently. We also helped on to advancing some toolkit for parliamentarians on the legislative process. So I think those are the two last most recent projects that we've been doing.
You mentioned about the toolkit about the Malaysian legislative process, which APHR just launched late last year, I think in December. In that toolkit, inside the toolkit, it contains research to better understand and unpack the legislative process and also how to help both CSOs and parliamentarians to work together to advance human rights through the legislative process. Can you explain a bit about how Malaysia's legislative system works and like how a bill becomes a law, essentially, in Malaysia?
So the lawmaking process in Malaysia is quite basic because we essentially follow the Westminster UK model, right? So say when the country has an issue to deal with and a law is required. So the process starts off with engaging stakeholders, then the government will start to draft a version, and then it is tabled in parliament, and then a vote happens at the policy level, and then the vote happens again at the committee stage level, and then it's passed as a law at the lower house. Then it goes up to the upper house, which is really, it's more a process of, I wouldn't say rubber stamping, but they're not elected, right? So the members of Senate will give their comment. They can't really stop the process, but they can comment on that. So that's how the lawmaking is done in Malaysia. Yeah, but it's not ideal at all. Malaysia doesn't have a history of using it as using the committees to look into the committee stage of the debate. Is done at the very superficial level in parliament itself, not sent to the committees. So there are a lot of problems with the lawmaking process in Malaysia. This is a result of, you know, the long rule of Dr. Mahathir for 22 years, where the fundamental system of parliament was removed to bolster a position of a somewhat authoritarian position. And the parliament was essentially converted into some form of rubber stamp under his rule. So we're trying to unpack all these kind of things. And this government, my government, Government of Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim, is committed to passing the Parliamentary Services Act to finally empower parliament with budget and administrative authority to separate itself from the control of the Prime Minister's office, and thus allowing a better form of democracy, therefore a better form of lawmaking. So it's a process that we're going through. We've been looking at the Parliamentary Services Act for the last 3 years or so. We are hoping that by June, July, in this coming sitting, that we will be able to get this passed. It will be groundbreaking. And that, in essence, if we can get the fundamental basis of this done, then it will also translate to laws regarding human rights, laws regarding transparency, anti-corruption. So it's a whole pack of stuff. So one of the beneficiaries of this new law that we're pushing very hard for is, of course, the human rights sector.
Could you maybe elaborate a bit, because I'm interested in what you said about that the committee stage is very superficial. So is it that the committee doesn't actually deliberate on the particular bills?
No, they do deliberate. But It's done on a superficial level where the speaker reads out, you know, say Article 1 to 10, any comments. You know, you get up and you say, yeah, I disagree, right? Yeah. And then they vote on it straight away, you know. So it's not even a considered position. This is done as a superficial version because there are no committees in Malaysia. Like, Karina, you're Indonesian. In Indonesia, you have your komisar, right? Komisi. So the komisi, you know, Malaysian komisi is way behind you. You know, it doesn't have budget, it doesn't have enough workers, it doesn't have researchers, it doesn't have buildings, it has nothing. You know, so we're trying to rebuild this system of parliamentary democracy using the foundation of a independent, strong committee system. And in order to do that, to give it real meaning, we have to pass the law called Parliamentary Services Act, which was available in Malaysia at independence, which Mahathir then, Dr. Mahathir, removed. and repealed. So now we're trying to reinstate it back. Yeah. So, you know, there are many things that's just wrong in Malaysian parliament. The culture needs to change. For instance, under the current model, all the officers in parliament in Malaysia are technically appointed by the Prime Minister's office. Okay. So their boss is not parliamentarians. Their boss is the Prime Minister's office. You know, so that is fundamentally wrong. Our budget, every year there's no budget, right? The budget is lacking. So we've been asking for better budget for the commission to the committees to run. And that's still a process. So by passing the Parliamentary Services Act, we hope to establish an independent civil service that works for parliamentarians, not reporting to the Prime Minister. We hope to also get money, better funding, so that we can run a professional committee system. So all this would take a transition around 3 to 4 years or 5 years even, right? But the very start is to empower us to enhance separation of power between the executive, control over parliament, and also the judiciary. So all this needs to be done. So we are very excited about, you know, about the reform that the Prime Minister has promised us. But at the same time, many people are not very happy. The reform pace is very slow. But I think, you know, like Indonesia, your parliamentary system is much more advanced because you had your reformasi moment in the 1990s, late 1990s. You know, we had to wait for so long for this reformasi to take place. And technically, the reformasi really took place only last year. But I think overall, we need time. You know, I think in Southeast Asia, there is this idea that we have to do things a bit slower. That, you know, evolution rather than revolution. Okay. So we're just hoping that, you know, we have enough momentum and the government actually promises this reform and carry it out in the next few years.
The Parliamentary Services Act that you mentioned sounds like it's very needed and very important. But given the current, within the current model, what do you think is the most effective entry point for, let's say, CSOs or people advocates who want to advocate for certain thing, certain law revision, or to include certain things in a particular bill? Like, at what point in under the current model do you think it's most effective?
Okay, under the current model, I think members of parliament themselves do not have adequate resources to function. We can provide input and our opinion, but to assist us at that front, so that the laws are clearer what we want to get out of it, so that the committees then are armed with the reforms in writing, in proper planned out documentation. Then we can then approach the government, the Attorney General Office, the Law Minister, to discuss the demands that we want to see. Yeah, you know, ideally, they should just tell us, we have a problem A, and then we'll go around and find the solution B, C, and D, and then, you know, do all the research and then approach them. But we don't have resources for that now. So the best way for CSOs to engage with us, the parliamentarians that want to see reforms, is to assist us resource-wise, legal-wise, to, you know, to help us, because we have so many things to do as members of parliament. It's incredibly busy.
Right now, you're the MP for Subang, and you mentioned, of course, the Parliamentary Services Act, but is there any other particular issues that you're currently advocating for as an MP?
Well, what we're trying to do is not just to talk about reforms, and sometimes reforms are beyond our control. So we have to push our own government to reform the things that we promised my constituents. And my constituents are largely middle and upper middle class people. So they're lawyers, engineers, doctors. They are all very concerned about all these core issues. So what I do is I will try my best to remind my own government that we have to deliver things, right? But at the constituency level, we do our basic political work, which is, you know, attending to the poor, provide budget for school repairs. We attend a lot of functions. What we do, and we've been doing this for the last 12 years, you can't just talk about anti-corruption or transparency. You really have to do it. So I think we're very proud by the fact that we have this system in place in my office where we constantly engage our residents, and they know where the taxpayer money is going and how we're spending it. You know, I think that's what we do generally in my constituency.
Very interesting in how you managed to include your constituents in the decision-making process in Parliament and make sure that they're up to date. I was wondering, what do you think in general, like outside your constituency, how good do you think the civic participation is in Malaysia in terms of, like, do people know what's going on in Parliament?
I would say, you know, this is mostly in the realm of the intellectual class and the middle class people. So I would say around maybe those who are really, you know, pushing for reform, maybe around 10-20% at most. Those who are concerned about corruption and the economy is probably the rest of them, 80%, right? Malaysians don't tend to be fully engaged on issues such as human rights or environmental rights. So it's really up to the members of parliament who are interested in this sector to keep pushing for it. Sometimes I do get notes from my constituents saying, you know, why are you fighting on this human rights issue? The economic issue is more important. You know, the price of eggs and chicken is more important to me than human rights issues. So there is always that constant need to, you know, inform our constituents and also to educate them. You must have a clean bill of human rights in order to export your goods.
What about, you know, I know that Malaysia has quite a few active civil society organizations who have also participated at times in the legislative process. I was wondering, how do you view the relationship currently in Malaysia between CSOs and Parliament and the government?
Okay, well, the government is supposed to be a reform government, so the CSOs have a lot of high hopes going into this, you know, this particular period of reform in the country. So, but they also don't understand that this is not really a full reform government, but this is essentially a unity government. They need to understand a bit more that it's much more complicated than just black and white issue. So to me, my role is to communicate this back and forth between the government and the CSOs and to ask them to, you know, organize themselves better, but not to be too demanding. Yeah, because if you want to have a, you know, a whole set of reforms, we can't get our partners to agree to it. So then, you know, it's going to be very contentious. What we need to adopt for Malaysia is an evolving organic lawmaking process. So, you know, maybe you can settle for 50% of the reforms you want. And then over the, once the law is passed, we create the culture to move another level up to 70%. Then maybe 3 years down the line to 100%. But it has to be based on feedback. As you know, the current government is made of many political parties, and they're not all Pakatan Harapan. In fact, we don't have majority at the Pakatan Harapan level. So we do need our partners who have no reform agenda to form a government, right? So the CSO need to understand this is the real political situation that's happening.
Thank you for giving us that overview about the situation in Malaysia and how CSOs can also work together with parliamentarians to advance human rights. As you know, APHR was formed with the idea of creating regional solidarity among parliamentarians across the Southeast Asian region. How do you think that Southeast Asian MPs can help create positive change in the human rights situation of Malaysia and as well as other countries? And what kind of regional solidarity you think can be initiated?
The most important thing for Malaysia, at least, is to sort out our internal issues first and give us a foundation for human rights to thrive and to expand in Malaysia. Assuming that we get the reform agenda on for the next, say, 1 or 2 more years, then Malaysia will be in a position in 2025 as chairman of ASEAN to try and bring this idea of an Asian or ASEAN type of democracy that respects human rights. Because so many ASEAN countries are not fully democratic and does not really respect human rights, but we need an approach that they can understand. Yeah, you know, I'm not advocating compromising anything, but I'm advocating an evolution and using Malaysia, Indonesia, to some extent, Philippines and Thailand and Singapore as a foundation to create this sense of human rights and make sure that human rights are interlinked into international trade, into standards, into economic rights as well. I think that is so important for the ASEAN experiment, so to speak, to promote human rights.
Thank you very much, YB Wong Chen, and thank you for joining us today in this episode of Advocate. That was an episode of Advocate by APHR, ASEAN Parliamentarians for Human Rights. Drop your ideas for any podcast topics or any interview subjects for this podcast through info@aseanmp.org. That's info@aseanmp.org. And also let us know what your thoughts are on this episode. Before we sign off, I would like to thank you for your support and thanks for tuning in. I'm Karina Teusi-Jarana. See you soon.